Round two, welcome to Inverticast. We had, a timing issue because I don't know, it's America. In any case, today, welcome to Inverticast. Obviously, I'm Leah from Tarantulia, and with me as always is Simon from the Mantis Garden. Hello, Simon.
Hello, yeah, you're right.
Awesome. So today we're going to be talking about cephalopods, which is an order of invertebrates that are found in the ocean, or in the seas. And they are organized by, like, they're highly advanced and organized, and they include octopuses, squids, cuttlefish, and nautiluses. There's an extinct cephalopod that is also included in this, which is the ammonoid, yeah,
That was
ammonite.
great.
That's it, ammonite. Sorry, it's in my notes. So the best known feature of a cephalopod would be its arms. A lot of people mistake them for being tentacles. They are not tentacles, they are arms, except for squids, which have two tentacles.
You gonna tell them the difference?
Sorry.
Are you gonna tell them the difference?
Between tentacles and arms. Yes, tentacles are really, they're long, slender type arms that actually have a widened portion at the end of them that contains suckers. And that is like the scientific term. I couldn't find the actual scientific term of what the suckers are, but no, they're just called suckers.
Nope.
And they have hooks. They also have like little claw-like hooks on the suckers and stuff. So that's the difference between tentacles and arms and the arms. Although octopus arms do have two rows of suckers that go down the entire length of the arm. That's pretty much the main difference. So octopus are capable of learning, and they have a considerable intelligence. I'm sure you a lot of people have heard of the octopus named Inky at the New Zealand aquarium, who was an escape artist, found his way out of the aquarium, and he's pretty famous for escaping, which luckily found his way to, a saltwater source like the actual ocean. But yeah, it escaped. So that's another
Is that the one
pretty
that got out of the tank when it hit the floor and went into a drain and out to the sea?
Yep, that's the one.
Ah, right. Exactly. Because when you said Inky, I thought I'd never heard of that, but I heard of
Yeah.
it. And now I know what you're talking about. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. No worries. That's part of that octopus was using actually a few of its features, one of them being that they can squish and like squeeze into all sorts of places that you don't think that they'd be able to, but they do. And they are very, very smart. Like they can, like I said, they can solve problems, they can find their way through mazes. And there's been a lot of research done as to like how smart they really are. So, I mean, I'm sure you've seen probably some videos of that, of like the octopus, that they put food in one like cat, like a portion of like a tank or something, and then they make it to where if the octopus figures out to push this button or whatever, and then like a lever comes up and they get the food. And they figured it out. They figure it out every time. There have also been field studies in the tropical seas near Indonesia that have recorded octopuses exhibiting tool using behaviors. So that's another indication of that intelligence. And most cephalopods possess chromatophores, which are color pigment cells in their skin. So they either are color pigment or reflective cells. And the colors and the patterns are usually exhibited during specific behaviors like attacking prey, camouflaging, resting, and alarm or defense. So another really great example of that would be a good example of like an alarm coloration would be the blue ringed octopus, which is really beautiful and quite colorful. And it can change its blue rings to like different sizes and whatnot. But that is an alarm mechanism because they are very toxic. And we'll get into that. So we'll talk about those guys. So let's talk about octopus first, because that's probably the most well-known cephalopod. They are generally any eight-armed mollusk. They range greatly in size, so they can be like the smallest, I think, is 2 inches, about 5 centimeters, to 18 feet, which is 5.4 centimeters. Their arm span can be of almost 9 meters, which is 30 feet. So the largest octopus known is the giant Pacific octopus, which I believe the largest was measured at about 30 feet with the arms and everything. They do have a secular body, meaning their body is segmented, if you will. And they have large, complex eyes. And eight arms, each arm has the two rows of the fleshy suckers, as I mentioned before. And their mouth is the only part of them that has an actual bone, which is a bony, like, beak kind of protrusion. And they actually use that for, like, prying open clams or mollusks and stuff, because they are carnivorous. So they do eat other creatures. So, let's see what else. Yeah, they have 3 hearts and blue blood. I thought that was really interesting. They have, you know, a closed circulatory system just like we do, but they have 3 hearts. So that's really impressive. And in the order of octopoda or octopus, there are 289 species of octopus. And the name octopus is directly translated from Greek for 8-footed. So, obviously. They do have a brain, however, it's more spread throughout their entire body. So 2/3 of their neurons are within the arms. So essentially their arms have their own brains. So what that really means is that they can be using one arm to like have a mollusk and be eating that at its beak, and then the other arm can be doing something entirely different, like crawling across the ocean floor, or you know, catching another mollusk, stuff like that. So pretty amazing. They have
since I've got older.
What?
Mine, they work independently from my brain since I've got older.
I wish. Now. I don't know.
Yeah. They are an amazing thing, though, that the way that, you know, that the brains can communicate with each other when they want and ignore each other when they want. I think that's fantastic.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm going to go over here. These two arms are going to go over here and undo this bottle. Well, those arms over there are going to look for shells and crabs and stuff. So,
yeah,
that's just mental.
It is. It's totally mental. And then the last 3 arms are the ones walking.
Who needs a secretary? Get an octopus. That's what you need.
For sure. There was one last little tidbit. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. So they have an excellent sense of touch and taste. So with their arms and those suckers, they can feel very, very well, so they know what they're touching, but they also taste what they're touching. So that's a lot of input for one. Can you imagine being able to taste with your hands?
Just the places like, things have been.
Gross. I don't know if I want to taste some of the things that I touch. I'm not privy to that.
No.
So a few species of octopus that are of note, I guess, are the ones that I found. I found a few, like 3, that I thought were really interesting and worth mentioning. So the common octopus, which is the most studied of all the octopus species because it's one of the most widely distributed. It's found in the shallows of tropical, subtropic, and temperate waters from the eastern Atlantic all the way to the South African coast. They are the most intelligent of all the invertebrates of the world. And they're the ones that if you ever like look up a picture of an octopus, you're probably going to find a picture of the common octopus or Octopus vulgaris is the scientific name. And then the next octopus that I thought was interesting and worth noting is the giant Pacific octopus. So this is the Enteroctopus Diflini. Yeah. Anyhow, it's the largest species in the world and can weigh about 150 pounds and be about 15 feet. And that's without the arm length, which is pretty massive for an octopus. Like it's pretty huge. The next one I have is the Dumbo octopus, which is actually known. They're actually a group of octopus known as the umbrella octopuses. So, Grimpotiotis.
It's easier if you just say serene.
Huh?
You've got serene, you've got inserine. Serene are the ones with a little
thing
on top.
Yeah, they're really interesting because they're the deepest. Like they live in the deep sea, and so they have been found at depths as deep as like 13,000 feet, which is pretty incredible for any creature. So they definitely dwell like in the deep seas, and that's also why they're very small. They're not very big at all, and their arms aren't quite as long as other octopuses, and they tend to like curl them inward, kind of in a spiral. Yeah. And of course, the last cool octopus species that I found was, as I mentioned before, the blue-ringed octopus or the Haplocplana octopus. They're venom. They're scary. These guys aren't deep sea octopuses. They can be found in pretty much tropical, subtropical regions. But their venom is 1,000 times more toxic than cyanide. And these guys, they carry enough of their venom to kill 26 human beings.
No surprise where you find them.
Yeah, right.
Australia.
Australia, definitely.
That's unusual for Australia to get an animal that's evil. Yeah.
Well,
like an octopus, tiny little things they are, and yet it's evil.
They're not very large at all, but absolutely like horrifying just for that fact alone.
Yeah.
I do believe I was warned when I spent time in Japan for that 2 years. Mm-hmm. I was warned of the blue-ringed octopus because Okinawa is a tropical island, and so I'm pretty sure that they tend to be found around that island quite a bit. And that for some reason they also like warned us about the Portuguese man of war, which is not an octopus.
Jellyfish.
It's more in the jellyfish family. But those things are terrifying as well.
We have them here. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, all around. We've got so many jellyfish and other things like that around here. It's unbelievable.
I believe it. That's amazing.
I know. And Europe's just, you know, the way it is, the Atlantic.
Yeah.
It's got all sorts of weird stuff. I mean, we even get great white sharks here.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So there's a lot of, I'm not gonna argue with any marine biologists out there because I that's not what I do.
Right.
But I know what we get around here on the coast and that, and we do have a lot of octopus. I've seen a lot of octopus. In rock pools, quite small ones. We do get them all washed up. And another thing we get, which I'm sure you're going to move on to, is cuttlefish.
Yeah, cuttlefish.
UFOs as well.
Yeah, cuttlefish are pretty interesting. They actually have They have one bone. It's kind of a spiny protrusion that is on the alongside their backside. And they do they have arms? I don't remember if I don't think
I've sort of face palms. I don't know what to call them.
Right. they're kind of weird looking.
I don't know. They look like Davy Jones out of
from the
Caribbean. That's the sort of thing they've got going on with the face.
Or
I thought they actually had cuttlefish bones here, but I just realised I'd swapped them out for limestone. They're really freaky. I mean,
they are.
The speed at which they can change as well, or change their colours, is another amazing thing. I know that octopus change, it's 220 milliseconds they can change colour, like that.
Wow.
Whereas a chameleon takes about 15, 20 seconds to change.
Right.
So if you look at the differences there between, you know,
right,
in the background, you know, instantly. So if he was chasing it, you know, if it was a shark or something, they ate them and he was chasing it and it went somewhere around the corner and changed, you've lost it.
You don't know it. Yeah, you know,
you've lost it completely.
Well, and chameleons, it's pretty interesting that you mentioned chameleons and their ability to change color as well, but they only do that as camouflage and kind of a defense mechanism, whereas octopus use their color changing abilities for all sorts of things. So not just camouflage, but also like a defense mechanism. So that would be that camouflage, but also for attacking prey or luring prey closer to them. So they will use their color changing abilities to do that.
I know they've got...
I found that really fascinating. I found that really fascinating.
Three or four layers of skin. I'd have to get a marine biologist on the job. But I think there's three or four different layers of skin on an octopus. Well, top one's chromatophores, and then you've got another one underneath that, another one underneath that, another one underneath that. They all reflect different light waves, which creates the full spectrum that they can so like mix into, which
that's
is
fascinating.
I mean, just having them on your top of your skin and just being able to change. I'd love that. That's an ability I would like.
That would be a cool ability. I agree.
The smelling with the hands business, that they can keep that. I don't want
that. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I don't want to taste them by touch. No, thank you very much. But I don't like colour.
Yeah, for sure.
It's been a fortune all of these, wouldn't it? Brown. There you go. Done. Instant tan.
I believe, instant tan. That would be amazing. And also, I just also wanted to mention that the oldest record of a fossil of an octopus is actually about 350 million years old. So they've been around quite a while. And the next, so our next creature would be squids. And these guys are 248 million years old. There are more than 300 species of these 10-armed, Toothalocleia order.
Gecko. Oh.
Yeah, there you go. cool.
That's just the Greek for it.
Yeah, just the Greek.
There you go. Have it.
It's all Greek to me. Whatever. Yeah, okay.
I should have named them. Anyway, squids, amazing things. Again.
Yeah, actually, squids are pretty impressive. They have an elongated tubular body with a short, compact head. And two of their arms are developed into long tentacles, which we were talking about earlier. They expand at the ends with four rows of suckers, and they also include toothed horny rings in those suckers that help them like grip and hold on to things. They do use them more as arms than their other arms, if you will. So they use them more as like hands and And if they lose one of their tentacles, it will not grow back. So that's another pretty interesting thing about them. Their eyes are actually almost as complex as a human being's eyes. So they have pretty decent vision, comparable to our own, which is fascinating. And then their eyes are actually on either side of their head. So they're not front-facing eyes like ours. They're just kind of like our ears. They can be luminescent as well, and they bear numerous light organs, also those chromatophores and the photophore, something like that.
Yeah, I'll do.
luminescence, you know.
Yeah.
And there have been found to be bioluminescent as well, like species of squid that are bioluminescent, especially in the deep, deep sea. So, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the vampire squids. They're pretty cool because their bioluminescence, it's almost like an airport runway. So like their little lights just kind of light in a synchronized. It's really fascinating to check it out. If you haven't seen it, you definitely need to check that one out because it's pretty fascinating. They also serve as food for a lot of species throughout the ocean, like sperm whales and bony fishes, and of course us. We do like to eat squid. They also vary in size from like 1/3 inch to the largest living invertebrate in the entire world, which would be 13 meters, 43 feet. There also have been stories and reports of a 60-foot squid, which has not been like scientifically confirmed. Although this, when we get into mythology, that's when this is going to become important, because obviously, like there's been some tales of some very giant squids or giant octopus. So that's what I got about squids. Do you have anything to add about them?
Yeah, you know, a giant squid is a bit silly, but my son isn't afraid of anything but giant squid for some reason. He's absolutely terrified of giant squid. I don't know why.
Well, that's okay. I mean,
say or anything like that. He's not going anywhere near it because of giant squid. He's just obsessed with these giant squid. And he's not a kid. And he's 35.
Yeah.
So I'm talking like a 6-year-old. He's
I mean, they are. They're kind of scary for sure. I mean, once we get into the mythology, when you hear about some of the stuff that we've you know, been telling each other about squids and octopus for centuries, like, I get it.
I think we watched Nemo, Captain Nemo, back in the day, and I think that did it.
I believe
that definitely did it. But then you see them, like, you see loads of, like, the old, like you say, the old mythological, especially the Greek ones. The movies where you've got the squid smashing the boats in half. I mean, there's even one in the Kraken is basically a squid.
The Kraken. Yeah, that one is a
octopus.
That one's a Scandinavian or Norse, essentially. Yeah, that's where that one originated. So that's pretty fascinating. So okay, but the next cephalopod that I felt was kind of interesting and worth noting would be the Nautilus, which they're really interesting because they're not your typical cephalopod. They have many arms, like they can have up to 90 arms apparently. So they have quite a few arms, but they're also known as a living fossil because they are 450 million years. Like that's the oldest record of a Nautilus, but also they have changed very, very little in that 450 million years. So this is a creature that, as I said, is kind of a living fossil. But they basically create their own shell, which was probably that calcium sodomite, you know, or so. And what happens is as they grow, see, they're hatched and born with four chambers of that shell. And so as they grow a new chamber, and then the creature itself will basically move into the next largest chamber and then build a little wall between the old one. But here's the cool thing about them, is that those old chambers that they used to live in or have moved to, they don't go to waste. They actually instead fill those up with gas so that they can float. So it affects their buoyancy in the water. So if they want to dive deeper down into the water, they just allow water to come into those chambers. If they want to be a little more floaty, if you will, they will just release the water and add gas into those chambers, and that will allow them to be more buoyant. So I thought that was a really, really interesting aspect of a Nautilus, like just that ability to use the chambers, the old chambers, in that way.
Captain Nemo again, aren't you? Because his ship was called the Nautilus.
The Nautilus, yeah.
He had the chambers that used to flood them, and so it went down. So yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that's the reason why it was called the Nautilus.
They also are really worth noting because as their Nautilus grows and stuff, it grows in a spiral-like shape, which a lot of people call it the sacred geometry or the golden ratio, which I believe, what is that? There's a scientific term. It's like it's the spiral, the golden ratio, sacred geometry, but these are all terms for the same thing. But it's really fascinating because this sacred geometry is found in all sorts of other things that are found in nature. You okay? Is your neck?
Oh, next to it. Yeah, today. Yeah, I'm having a bad time.
Sorry, Simon. but yes, the sacred geometry is found in like all sorts of things all throughout nature. So like sunflower seed pods, that very middle portion of the sunflower also has the golden ratio. You can find it in the snail shells. That spiral is very, it's very prominent in all through nature. And so that's why they call it the sacred geometry. So that's fascinating stuff, don't you think?
I just find them amazing. Anyway, I think the Nautilus, if you show your average person in the street a picture of a Nautilus, they'd know what it is. They'd seen it before. But if you ask them to tell you the name of it, they probably wouldn't know it.
They'll draw a blank. Yeah.
Because it's one of them creatures that we see the imagery all the time, but we don't actually hear the name of it because there's not much on them, is it? There's not much information banded about, you know. But it's like, I didn't know what they were called for many, many years, but I knew what it was.
Right.
I knew it was a cephalopod, and I knew what it was, and I knew it was old, and it was a living fossil, but I didn't know its bloody name. And that was been many, many years. And it's just because it's one of the things you don't hear the name of, you know.
Lily nailed it. Thank you, Lily, so much. But she said, it took me some time, but did you mean the Fibonacci, Leah? Yes, I did. I meant the Fibonacci sequence. It's that mathematical sequence that just, it's the perfect spiral within the rectangle. It's the same thing. That's the golden ratio or the.
That's why I married her.
Right.
She told me to say that.
Well, she's so smart. I mean, I can see why. Like, she's amazing. All right, let's go ahead and jump into the mythology. I mean, there's so much. There's so much on octopuses and squids, so that's actually really cool. Because these guys, I mean, they've been talked about in mythology and like ancient civilizations for a lot.
Never did an ounce of research on any of the mythology. I never do.
No.
I think squid and octopus are probably the one I know the most about, simply because it's just talked about so much.
And
it's everywhere in books. So, it's not something you really have to research that much. And people will have heard a lot of the mythology, I think.
Especially I think so, too. Especially the Kraken. Yeah, the Kraken is one that I think a lot of people have heard of. If they don't know, like, the complete mythology of it, they at least know, like, what you're kind of talking about. So let's get into it.
Borrowed, wasn't it? It's been borrowed by different cultures.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout, and you know, they've had something like the Greeks had something similar to the Kraken. I can't remember.
Yes, they did.
They had something very similar to the Kraken. In the movies, they call it the Kraken because everybody knows what the Kraken is.
Right.
And as you quite rightly said earlier, the Kraken is actually Norse mythology, Vikings.
It is, yeah.
Even when it comes to like David Jones' Locker and the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, etc., they've used the Kraken.
Yeah, well, the Kraken is cited and it's cited and mentioned in all sorts of things. I think originally, like more modern, we know it from like 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I think that was one of the very first mentions of the Kraken. But actually, I found that the Kraken was actually first, very very first mentioned in 1180.
Wow.
Yeah. By let's see. Da-da-da. I wrote it down too, by King Sverre of Norway. And basically they mention it as being a terrifying sea monster, often depicted as a giant squid or octopus. The creature was a colossal, like it was as big as like an island. And that it was able to basically, what it would do is it would wrap its arms around a ship and capsize it and then swallow crews whole. If that didn't work for it, then it would churn up a whirlpool that would, again, suck in the ship, capsize it, and then the Kraken would be able to eat the entire crew. That's pretty much like the legend of it. But it, as you said, it has appeared in a lot of popular culture. It's appeared in the Pirates of the Caribbean. It's appeared in, I believe, Moby Dick has of a version of it.
And it's quite a few of the 1960s movies, the Greek movies. Is there one in Jason of the Argonauts?
Yep.
And there's one in the... I can't remember now. I can't remember the names of things. I'm getting old, but yeah,
you're fine.
There's quite a few times I've seen it in movies, but the '60s did use quite a lot of it.
Quite a lot of Kraken, yeah.
I think was responsible for reviving it.
Yeah.
For 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and he's like, "Oh, there you go. Let's have a Kraken in there."
There is a Kraken in that.
It wasn't really mentioned until, like, Davy Jones' Locker and all the weird stuff and the pirates sort of era.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Well, and then, you know, I was in the Navy for 5 years, and that is definitely something that we mention quite a bit. It's just Navy, like, talk is, oh, send them to Davy Jones' Locker. That's pretty much what we mean, is, like, let the Kraken eat them. And you mentioned the ancient Greek mythology, which I definitely did some research on. This one, it's not necessarily called the Kraken,
no,
but it is an octopus of that is found in the legendary seafarer mythologies of Odysseus. So it is known as the Polymedus, and it evokes concepts of wisdom and cunning. In the Greek mythology, it has been kind of interpreted that that there's a possibility that the sea monsters that haunt Odysseus are actually symbolic of the disturbing, undifferentiated aspects of the classical Greek psyche, which is like the unknown and the chaos of our very inner workings of a human being, right? And so through Odysseus's shrewd wit and cunning, he's able to be victorious over these monsters. And that basically he reigns supreme. So that would be representative of a human, of humans being able to master their own minds and overcome those unknown chaos inducing factoids or factions of their lives. So that's pretty fascinating. But I also found all kinds of other cool mythologies that don't just involve the Kraken, which is, again, like super terrifying and really scary. But there are some actually really positive and beautiful mythologies. So in Babylonian, sorry?
I don't know those. I only know the terrifying ones.
Yeah, right. They're the most popular. I mean, who could you blame? In Babylonian myth, the goddess Tiamat was actually closely associated with the octopus. She was waging war against deities and eventually was defeated by the storm god, Marduk. From Tiamat's body, from her defeated body, came the heavens and the earth, and forever linking octopus with creative power of the divine feminine. So that one was pretty interesting. I didn't really find much more about it. I mean, I'm sure if you really want to, you can find the story of Tiamat from the Babylonian mythology, but that one was really cool. But we also have one from Japanese mythology and Shintoism. They tell stories of a colossal creature called Akorokamai. Akorokamai. I've been there, and
you've
this is
been
a
there. I couldn't believe you. Whatever comes out of your mouth, I couldn't believe you. That's how you say it.
Yeah, Akorokamai. I'm pretty sure that's how that one's said. But it's basically the spirit that is described as a combination of a human and an octopus. So it's a creature that is like part human, part octopus, and it's considered benevolent. So it's kind. It's good. It resides in the waters of Funka Bay and in Hokkaido. But it's believed that the Akorokamai, it's believed that it possesses healing qualities, and a lot of the Shinto people would present tributes to it to aid in the recovery of like injured limbs and things like that. So pretty cool.
I just enjoyed the pronunciation. I was just loving it.
Yeah.
It's awesome, isn't it? You know, you get tongue-tied over something.
I did.
Anybody out there that's Japanese, please let us know in the YouTube comments if she said it right.
If I said it right. Yeah. Which I kind of doubt that I did. If I said it right, then cool. Kudos to me, but I really highly doubt it.
I give up after reading the K. That would be it. I give up. The Japanese just wipes me out. I just look at it. I go, nah, can't do that.
Yeah, I think for me it's French.
Crying.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Akorokamai. I'm pretty sure that's Akorokamai. I might be totally wrong on that, but it's really fascinating that a lot of the mythology surrounding octopus and squids, other than the Kraken, of course, actually have a lot more to do with like being wise, having, you know, a lot of intelligence, having the kind of rejuvenating properties that octopuses do, healing. You know, I also found a few other mythologies that I didn't take notes on, and now I'm kind of regretting that because they were really nice as well. But yeah, so I think that's again, you know, we've talked about like the ancient wisdom of peoples from other cultures, from, you know, cultures that aren't really around as much anymore, and just kind of the mythologies that they left behind, like the Hopi Native American people and their observations of the dragonfly, of transformation, and, you know, that eternal life, you know, that being reborn or rebirth. Same with the
reincarnation.
Yeah. And same with ancient Egyptians and, you know, the scarabs, the scarab beetles and cicadas and whatnot. So it's really interesting that, you know, we find this again with octopus and squids, because, you know, we know that they have a very high intelligence. They are able to use tools. They're able to, like, problem solve. And they're associated with healing and wisdom. So that's really cool.
Well, that means if they're associated with wisdom, that means they knew they were smart a long, long time ago.
Right. So people ancient people knew that they were smart even then. So that's really, really fascinating.
I mean, just some of the things I've seen. I mean, have you seen any videos of them playing?
Uh-huh.
I've seen an octopus playing basketball.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. it was, when you watch the video, 5 minutes later, you think, I want an octopus. You know, you want one after that. After seeing it, you really want one. You can actually play with them. It's something that attracts humans to animals is when you can, you know, associate with them. You can socialize with them almost.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, the ones in the scenery, they are like dolphins and seals and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's stuff that we can play with that we're more interested in than you know, nobody's interested in a bat, that way, you know.
Yeah.
Unless it's going on your plate where nobody cares.
Right. They are a food source and they are pretty tasty, I'm not gonna lie.
Thankfully, but there you go.
I think I've had squid. Not so much octopus, but I've had, you know, calamari, like fried calamari and stuff.
I had both many, many times.
Yeah, there you go.
Many, many times. And cuttlefish.
And Lily says that now she's going to be feeling guilty every time she eats an octopus, which I totally get, because they're interesting. They're fascinating creatures. They're so smart. Like,
yeah, we shouldn't really be scoffing everything we see. I mean, that's what we do, isn't it? We see something and we eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I'm no vegetarian.
No, me neither.
Vegetarian, but I don't like to randomly eat things that, you know, just for the sake of it.
Right.
You know, there's billions of chickens, so I eat chicken. Yeah, sure. They're not going to run out anytime soon.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's fine. As far as my conscience is concerned, that's absolutely fine. but when you start picking on things like lobsters and, you know, crabs, lobsters, crayfish.
Right. Yeah.
Octopus, squid. I start feeling a bit, not going to eat that because we're already overfishing. We're already doing damage.
Yeah,
let's not add to it, really.
Yeah, that's the sad part about it, is that, like, we've done so much damage to the sea creatures and the oceans and whatnot. So I mean, it is really sad, but in the same token, like, that's life. But I do agree, like, you know, it's, we need to be a little more controlled with it, if you will. But I'm just fascinated with the mythology of the Kraken. I think that is one of my favorites in the whole world, because it's just so freaking popular. I mean, you find it in so many different, like, you know, books and literary, like, mentions and Davy Jones, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. So, I mean, it's all over. The Kraken is amazing.
It is. It's one of the, I think, squid. And sperm whales are one of the nature's biggest battles ever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you don't think about it, we don't see it, you know. They aren't going about, oh, the lion and the antelope and that, and things like that.
Right.
You think about a sperm whale and a giant squid, But when they go into battle, it's not
it's epic.
One going the other. It's there's a 50-50 chance there that one's going to kill the other.
Absolutely. I mean,
and that's a battle. That's not.
They're so evenly matched.
Yeah.
You know, like it's really, really spectacular. Like it's really something. Because squids will eat sperm whales, and sperm whales will definitely eat a squid. So, you know.
That's what they eat. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned Moby Dick, because in Moby Dick, you know, he's chasing after this sperm whale, essentially. He's chasing after this big white sperm whale. And as he's doing that, he encounters a giant squid. You know, and so it's really fascinating how, like, okay, he encounters a giant squid. How did you not put it together that the squid is also hunting the sperm whale? You know?
They attack each other. I've seen a few videos that, whereas the sperm whale's gone diving down looking for the squid, and the squid's come out of nowhere and attack the sperm whale. It's like...
Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah, well, that night, it's none of that chase me down thing like you get in the savannah with like the lions and tigers and
right.
It's actually a fight. It they're up for it, both of them, and they both want to have a go. And it's like nature's biggest battle, and physically biggest battle as well, because they're huge, both.
Yeah,
of them.
They're massive. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah.
Quite
well, the squid is definitely the largest living invertebrate in the entire world. So, you know, when
that's the largest eye, isn't it?
Yeah, all
creatures.
Yes, they have the largest and most complex eye of the ocean creatures for sure. But I mean, they're fascinating. I also think that maybe we could discuss how they are able to propel themselves, because I didn't happen to mention that when we were talking about squids. They basically will take water in to their gills or their front part of them, and then they expel it through their gills, and that is basically how they propel themselves through the water. So it's through that. They're kind of hydro...
Hydraulic. They've got a few different ways, though, haven't they, of doing it? They've got a couple of different ways of movement.
Yeah, they do also have fins on the sides of their body. So that's the long part of their body. They do have those fins they kind of flap like ears, so that also helps to propel them. And I forgot to talk about the ink.
Ink? Yes.
Yeah, yes. We still got some time. We can talk about the ink. Inky!
That was it.
But, their ink is actually a defense mechanism. So squids and octopus both use ink to basically stun a predator and to leave behind kind of a shadow, like a false octopus. So when they eject this ink into the ocean, it confuses the predator, but it also stays in that one place that they ejected it, so that it kind of appears to be a squid or an octopus in the shape of them, right? And then they skedaddle, right? So it confuses predator. But squids also have an extra bit with their ink, so that when they eject it, it actually also stuns the predator by, like, it kind of stings them. It almost like, I read about it, and it has an effect on them that it makes them confused for a little while. So there's a chemical reaction, and obviously, like, it really, really is kind of painful for the predator. So, which I thought, again, was really, really interesting that the certain squid species can do that.
Yeah, cuttlefish can do it as well, can't they?
Cuttlefish can, yes. Yeah.
One of the interesting things I know about the ink from octopus and squid is the deeper you go in the ocean, the lighter the ink becomes. So, like, if it's really, really dark, really deep, in the ocean,
Yeah.
It expels white ink.
Oh, interesting.
Rather than black ink, because there's no point in expelling black ink because nobody can see it.
Right.
So they expel the white ink instead. So it goes down. The deeper you go, the
lighter it is.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah,
I know that.
Species of octopus, but you know, the ones that are found really low down expel white ink rather than the black ink that we're all used to.
Right. Well, and I know that the Dumbo octopus or the umbrella octopus, they don't actually have ink glands, so they don't expel ink at all.
No, the serene doesn't have.
Yeah, no.
Those are the only ones that I know a little bit about.
No, that's cool. That's cool.
And it's basically because the Pokemon, I think one of them is based.
Well, they're so
based on one.
Yeah, I mean they live so far deep in the oceans and stuff that there aren't a lot of predators that prey on them, so they don't really need. I guess they don't really have a need to be able to expel ink, because they're not really running from a whole lot of things, if you will.
They're
you know,
as well.
Yeah.
They're so cute.
They're super cute. Yeah.
They remind me of the little ghosts that Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Remember those? If you just put two fins on the side of their head, there, it's like, yeah, that's little ghosts that Pac-Man.
They do. They're the Pac-Man ghosts. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what is funny about that? One of the Pac-Man ghosts is actually named Inky.
Probably why. I bet they've seen it. Yeah.
What do you know?
I'm not that much of a nerd that I actually know the names of Pac-Man ghosts.
Okay, well, thanks for that.
Hey, you admitted it.
I did it. You're right. I'm a nerd. Well, I guess we've reached the end of the podcast where, you know, we do our shameless plug and possibly talk about what we're going to talk about next week. So what do you got, Simon? You got anything coming up this week? Anything fun?
Hopefully I'll make some videos this week because I've pretty much sold out of Mantis.
Oh, wow.
So I'm selling isopods this week only, probably for a few weeks, because I'm still waiting for, I've got loads and loads of hoops in here, I'm waiting for them to hatch. So until they hatch, I can grow them a bit. I'm a bit stuck. I underestimated demand. So I've been bought out, basically. so I'm finding myself at a loose end quite a lot during the day now. So I'm probably
going
to be able to get some time to make some videos. I know that Liliana got four tarantulas this week.
Yeah, I saw your unboxing video.
They're from Bats, but they're originally from Shady.
Oh, what do you know? How awesome.
Yeah, Shady Slings. So,
rock on, Shady.
Be, definitely doing some kind of rehouse for them.
Okay, cool.
It's spectacular because they're only small tarantulas at the moment. They're only slings. But yeah, we'll be definitely doing a video for them. And I'll probably think of some other things. I used to be able to think of one every day, so I'm sure I can come up with something.
Oh, yeah. You will. I know you will.
Mantis Garden. And my shop, The Mantis Garden. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram as The Mantis Garden. So,
Garden. And join his Discord. He has
just Mantis Garden.
Yeah, The Mantis Garden. He's also on Discord. I actually really enjoy The Mantis Garden's Discord server. You guys are a lot of fun. And that's where you can find actually a lot of our fellow YouTubers who we talk about and chat with a lot here in Verticast. So you can find Bazants and Eden's Inverts, you know, Shady Things also hangs out with us in the Discord. She's around. I am also in the Mantis Garden Discord. So you can find me if you'd like.
Ramblings, Tarantula Ramblings, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
He's in there.
Yeah. We've got a pretty good, you've got a really great community there. Everybody's very sweet and friendly. And we jostle each other a little bit and kind of joke around and stuff.
But human they are. If you don't, then stay away.
Right. They're fantastic. You guys are fantastic. I'm not even worried about that. I guess I have a couple of shameless plugs. Just, I've got a couple of videos that I am almost done editing, so I will be dropping those, and I've got tons of species spotlight and rehousings to do. It's just a matter of me doing it. So help me do it. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I'll get that done. Otherwise, I'm waiting to hear if my Cereophagus levitum got the job done, and if Gavin over at Ghosties Tarantulas, if his female has dropped an egg sac just yet. I think it's still a little early. I think like we still need about another week or two. But I'll let you guys know if I've got, you know, I've got some slings coming my way. So we'll see what happens.
That'll be cool. That'll be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a few males that I'm really hoping I can send off to help them breed. I'll probably get in touch with Jackie again, because I know she's got probably a few females that, you know, breeding projects. But other than that, I don't have anything else. If you guys like Inverticast, please like and subscribe. Check us out on most of the audio streaming services. I know we're on Audible, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio. Yeah, we're like everywhere. We also have our own Discord. So I will, of course, post a link for that in the description below. If we missed anything and you know something about octopuses or the Kraken that we didn't happen to mention, go ahead and write a comment down below. Let me know. And of course, let me know if I pronounced that Japanese word correctly. Yeah, no, I butchered a lot of words this week.
Don't worry about it. It's good fun, actually. It was something I was afraid of, because I, as soon as you start going under the water, I lose the plot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no.
Because normally I wing it every week, and I believe that I can keep going for an hour without without any research, you know, added research. At this time, I was a bit, you know, a bit worried, because I've never really read up on cephalopods.
Well, so, and I'm afraid that I might have opened. I know, and I might have opened a Pandora's box of invertebrates, because apparently there's a ton in the ocean, like that I didn't even know. Yeah, so we'll just keep that one to ourselves. Shady Thing says it was nice to listen to while rehousing teas. Thanks. Thank you, Shady Things. I appreciate that. I'm glad that we were able to provide a little entertainment while you were rehousing some teas. That's awesome. And then, yeah, so next week, what do you think we should discuss? Because I'm not really sure.
Well, when you said that, the ocean. I thought we could skip the ocean and just go on land a little bit and then go in the water. How about water, freshwater invertebrates, freshwater insects, let's say.
Okay. Might like dragonflies.
It's mollusks and there's, you know.
Yeah. Or like, what have we got, like sea urchins? No.
Water boatmen, water scorpions, there's tons of them.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that would be awesome. So freshwater invertebrates for next week. We will do the research so that you don't have to. And we'll see you guys next week then. That sounds perfect. Thanks, Ivan.